it seems, to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to a special Second Rise episode of the Rise Up podcast. This is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff for the people in their communities. I hope you're doing well this week. Cindy and I are off traveling. We are heading to the UK, to Scotland and England to see our kids and visit some friends and maybe see some bakeries. But I don't want to leave you alone at the bench while we're away. So the Second Rise episodes are past episodes from our ample archives of over 170 episodes at riseuppod.com. I'm going to be sharing some of my favorites with you over the summer, and we'll be back with new episodes starting on August 24th. So today on the show is Nate Hogue. And what more can I say about Nate? I talk about him a lot on this show, and I think about him almost every day. I met Nate on the first day of Wheatstock in Rhode Island in 2018 in the lobby of the hotel that we were staying at. I needed a lift to the venue. He needed a lift to the conference venue. So we thought, well, let's carpool. Let's share a ride there. And I'd never met him before, but you could just tell from across the room, oh, there's a baker for sure. This tall, lanky fella. Young guy, he's got a cycling cap on that looks rather flour dusted, you know, holding an apron. What more clues do you need? I went and introduced myself. We shared this ride. We ended up getting together that evening for supper because both of us were traveling alone. Don't want to eat alone. Hey, let's go out for dinner. And I remember we went to this little pizza place and had the most amazing dinner. I can't remember what we ate, but it was one of those times where you just talk for hours about what we were thinking of and our dreams and our bakeries and the challenges and all that stuff that makes the hard work that we do worth it. And we've stayed connected ever since. When I launched Bakers for Bakers the following year in 2019, Nate was one of the guys that I designed it for. And he's been part of the community there since day one. We get on Zoom at least once a month to listen to each other and talk to each other and offer support on whatever schemes we're hatching and or what schemes we've hatched that we're trying to keep afloat. Nate's bakery is called Break Bread, and they're in St. Paul, Minnesota, and they just celebrated their 6th anniversary, and they did this up in style. It was like a full-on party that combined all of Nate's passions, you know, great food and music and bikes and being funny. Lots of laughs, lots of funny stuff going on in and around his bakery. Now, this conversation you're going to hear, it's from the 5th ever episode of the Rise Up podcast from early in 2018. And his energy and thoughtfulness came through as clear as a bell. You're going to love this one. It's time for a Second Rise with Nate Hogue of Break Bread in St. Paul, Minnesota. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah. We're going through some transitioning at the bakery right now. And so it's a little stressful, but like good stress, which is nice. Like, there's plenty of opportunities for bad stress. So it's nice to have, but yeah, so that's, so it's like one of those weeks where there's just a million little details. And then as soon as you work on one, you find three more that need to be changed.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, and
really good.
Good. And you've got Easter coming up too, I bet. So
yeah,
that's got to keep you going.
Yep. Yeah. We got all the special orders with that coming in and some special breads and hot cross buns and all that. So
yeah. They certainly seem popular.
Yeah.
Well, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've been well since we last talked?
Yeah, since we were in Wheatstock. I got out of Boston just in time.
Did you?
Because there was a big storm coming.
I did not.
No, you didn't? You got stuck?
No, I got an extra day in Boston.
Oh, man. That's too bad.
I'm glad you made it.
Yeah. I stayed a couple extra days, so I got drenched in Providence for the first big storm. And then when I went to Boston, it was nice but cold. And then there was another one coming. So they'd already shut down New York and they were about to shut down Boston, but I got out about 4 hours early. So so that was good. So Yeah, well, it's great to hear you again.
Yeah.
For sure. For sure. So, what, how was Wheatstock for you?
It was great. And I'll just make a quick apology. I came home where it'd be quieter.
Okay.
And already I'm noticing like they'll hear the occasional dog in the background probably. So
no worries. I'll be chasing cats around myself. So that's all fine.
There you go. Man, Wheatstock was incredible for me.
Yeah.
It was incredible. The, both from, I mean, like just kind of on every level. It was so encouraging to be around other bakers and like when we went out for pizza that night and just to hear your stories and then, yeah, the educational side of it. I mean, like you're just in a, you're in a room full of textbooks, you know, like everybody's you know, even when you're working, you know, under one of the instructors, all the people around you also have their input and how they do things. And so that was great. And then, you know, and so, yeah, so I got stuck in Boston for an extra day. And my brother lives there, so I had a place to stay and everything, which is great. But it kind of gave me this, like, 24 hours to kind of process everything I'd taken in.
Oh, good for you.
If I had just shot home, I probably wouldn't, you know, I would have hit the ground running here. And so it was kind of a mixed blessing that way. But the yeah, and so, like, some of the changes that it were – kind of implementing now at the bakery are kind of as a result of just kind of things I picked up as far as everything from a commitment to use more Minnesota grown wheat to we're adjusting our bake schedule so that because we're tiny, so we usually operate with a morning two bakers. One comes in at 5, one comes in at 9. And it used to be they came in at 5 and 11. So we do like the morning bake and then a mid-morning mix and overnight proofing. And the and so now we've been adjusting starter schedules and trying to tweak it so that our two bakers overlap more so that we get more. We just realize there's more energy when you're working together, you know, and like how do we harness that and that communication that just comes from being in a tight space together. So adjusting our bake schedule to like, and then sitting down, I've been sitting down with everybody that works at Break Bread and just kind of checking in more intentionally. Like, what do you love about this job? What would you change if you could change anything? And by changing the bake schedule, everybody that works at Break Bread likes everybody else at Break Bread. Mm-hmm. And so it's this whole like, what if we can get that work done in 10 hours instead of 12 hours, overlap more and like hang out more together?
Yeah. You know? Well, that's like, awesome. Yeah.
And our hours change on Tuesday when we open up again after the weekend, and we've been tweaking the bake schedule this week. So that should, I think we've got it pretty much hammered out. And then even figuring out some of the breads and things we do that we're like, you know, it's not the best seller and we don't enjoy making it. Let's cut it. What we do. Yeah. And building in, this is actually one of my favorite things about how we're redoing our bread schedule is that we're building in a, instead of what I would refer to as the other baker saying, oh no, Nate has another idea. It's more of a built in almost every day of the week. There's a space for trying out something new. A new recipe, a hand mix of a small batch of something. So instead of my ideas being an extra burden, there's actually space for them and for the ideas of the other bakers.
that's so awesome. Yeah, it's the you want them to light up when there's a new idea, not shrink back.
Exactly.
In fear. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah, because as the person with the ideas, sometimes it's like, why isn't everybody excited about this? And you're like, oh, because they already have plenty to do. This is what.
The big one with me was always I love troubleshooting stuff, right? So if the bread didn't come out perfect, okay, well, let's talk about it and figure out what's going on. And so many people think that's that I'm looking at to give someone heck, right?
Yeah.
And that was a tough one just to say, come on, let's get in the spirit of, you know, we're a little bit scientists here as well. Why isn't it doing what we want it to do, you know? So, that's so cool. You know, we did our slow day was always Thursday, or I guess Thursday was the day that we had most slack in the schedule. And so we started doing a thing called the Thursday experiment. And we would actually, there were like three stages. If it was a complete disaster, then nobody needed to know that we did it. But if it was if it was halfway as good, we'd just, as people would come in, we'd say, hey, here, take this, try this, and let us know what you think, you know. And so then people would get this idea that when they were coming in, it's like, well, what are they working on today, right? And so, so it's a good way to, it engages your bakers, but it gets your customers kind of revved up as well if they know that you're always trying different things, you know, so. Yeah.
There you go. That's even like, we usually do that, like, you know, like getting ready for hot cross buns. Well, we haven't done those for a year. Let's dust this off. And so, you know, last week as we're doing test bakes, like we weren't selling them, but we were, when the regulars came in, we'd say, hey, we're just doing the test bake of this. We're going to tweak this and this, but I thought you might like one or two. And like, yeah, your customers love coming in and like seeing that you're trying new things and that they have a reason to come back. And
Yeah, I just did my the seventh year or eighth year of hot cross buns now I started last week for folks, and I'll tell you, I was so nervous the night before. It's just that thing. It's like it's been a year, and and you put it away. You think you made really good notes, and then you pull these notes, and you say, "What is this garbage that I wrote last year?" You know, but you know, every year they're better. And so thank goodness, but it's, I always lose one night's sleep, at hot cross bun season. Cause I don't, the way I'm set up now, I don't really do the test bake first. It's kind of all in.
Yeah, so, you do that in your wood fired oven also?
Yeah. It was the first time I'd ever done it in that. And, it worked out well. Cool. I do them on the day before my bread bake while the oven's still cool, like just before I give it the last big fire. And so I'm lucky I can get people to come just for the hot cross buns.
Yeah.
Or I'll hold them till the next day when they come for bread. But, I kind of cheat that way where it's like, oh, today's a cool oven day. So we're going to do hot cross buns or kolach or anything enriched. And then bread's on the hot oven day. But I know some guys that, hey, I've only got one oven. They're going in at 450 with all that butter, and we're gonna make it work. And they do. Yeah. So, you know, but I'm still trying to be respectful of bake times. and that, you know, like, you know, 1 minute at 900 degrees is not the same as 30 minutes at 400 degrees, you know?
There'd be some troubleshooting there.
For sure. So, well, no, cool. That's exciting. It sounds like your crew is on board with this. And so that's great. To me, that's a sign of a happy place, you know, when everybody's on board and throwing around ideas and stuff. So that's great. Good engagement there. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So take me back a bit, Nate. How did you get started in this crazy field?
So I've always enjoyed baking. Probably my first like serious intent, serious look at baking was, as a freshman in high school. I lived in Seward, Nebraska at the time. And, which is Nebraska's big on football. And while all my peers were like on the football team, that's the year I tried making my first sourdough starter. So I blended in really well.
That fit right in. Yeah, no problem.
Exactly.
It's like all the linemen were doing the same.
Right, yeah, exactly. But that was my first attempt at sourdough. But like I'd always enjoyed baking, and I failed. Like a teenage boy does not have the patience that it takes to to bake bread like that. This teenage boy didn't. So that's what I remember as kind of my first dabbling into it and stuff. And then I would make yeasted breads and rolls and things. And then when I was in college for a couple of years till I finished college, not to be confused with graduating, a much quicker path though. We were like, I was in a dorm, you know, we were in our dorm rooms and you couldn't bake anything or have any appliances or whatever. So like, but I figured out how to, I would make tortillas on hot plates and, it would fill up the dorm room. You know, everybody would know something was going on in that room. And, so things like that. But when I really got consistent and serious about baking was probably about, my oldest is 14 now. Just turning. So about 13 years ago is kind of when I turned a corner and, that's when my first child was born. And I was a stay-at-home dad for a number of years. And it gave me like the time and the place to really start learning about baking and baking bread. And so, and then it's also, you know, I think every baker loves the therapeutic side of creating bread out of flour and water and salt.
Yep.
And, you know, and it's something that feeds. It's also like as a stay-at-home dad, at the end of the day, it gave me a sense of accomplishment. Like I had something to show for the day, and which I always joke about, like, you know, the thing I should be most proud of is that my child was still alive, but you know, it's nice to have something physical to like pull something out of the oven and serve it with dinner and be like, I did this today. I accomplished something, which is, sometimes as a parent, you don't always feel like you're accomplishing anything. So, so that was then a number of years of doing that. And then I was also a performing songwriter and touring musician and, and did that on the side for a number of years. And I was getting, kind of getting burned out on that kind of, it was a lot of weekends. And as my kids got older, then they were in school all week and then I'd be gone on the weekends and I just was feeling disconnected from my family and things. And, so around that time, my friend Micah, he's also a musician and he and I would get together for lunch at least once a month just to check in with each other. And he kind of pointed out, he's like, whenever you're not on the road, you're baking bread and you're not really excited about being on the road anymore, but you're really excited about baking bread. What if we started doing this thing where people could sign up like a CSA and every week we could deliver a fresh loaf of bread to their door by bicycle? And so, that's where the idea started, where we could just kind of experiment one day a week. We rented space from another kitchen. Right. We didn't need delivery vehicles. We both liked to bike. We both had like old, burly, kids trailers,
right?
Bike trailers. And so we kind of gutted those and built boxes that we bolted on top of them. We started with just kind of a trial run. We put it on the neighborhood Facebook group. Would anybody be interested? And, I think within 24 hours, we had like 50 some people say, I'd do that.
Oh, that's
and awesome. So our first trial bake was actually out of my home oven here. And, I think we did like 24 loaves or something, which I know there's other home bakers that like have figured out how to do that, how to get massive amounts of bread out of their home ovens. It's impossible.
Yep.
Like, it's so hard. You know, and like trying to heat up the oven again, and I've loaded my ovens with different bricks and tiles, and it was a really, and so from the get-go, you're like learning how to do things on scale and how to make adapt equipment to do what you want it to do and adapt your bread schedule to fit what your equipment can do. And that's kind of like you're saying, that troubleshooting part of the problem solving and like this, it's like this kind of infinite puzzle with bread. There's always something to tweak or to adapt or whatever. And so we did that. We did our first trial run and I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota, and we did it in January. if we can do this in January, like it's only getting easier from here.
You got it.
So we did that. So what the trials from home went well. We got all our official licensing and stuff taken care of. Found a licensed kitchen that we could work out of one day a week, and So we did that in farmers markets for about a year and a half, 2 years. And about a year into it, we were like, if we really want to make a go of this, we need our own space to do what we want to do. And so, so that took about a year and a half from the first, like, going out with a real estate broker or a lease broker or whatever. Yeah. And we found a space that's like half a mile from my house, just straight down the street, really. Mm-hmm. It wasn't actually for lease, but it was empty. And I knew the owners of the building, husband and wife. The husband's a contractor and the wife does home daycare. And for 7 years, every Tuesday morning, I went over and sang with her kids.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Home daycare kids. Yeah. And so I was like, I'm just going to call them up and see what's going on with this space right now. And they've been fantastic landlords, which not everybody gets.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of like everything we do. I mean, we're a neighborhood bakery and we're community minded, community supported. And I think that's like just part of it is the fact that we have a landlord that lives four blocks away from me, that I've known their family for like 10 years now. Like now the kids that were in her home daycare, like come on their way home from school, stop by the bakery sometimes, you know, like these sorts of, it's one of those things where like, it looks like it just took a year and a half to like put together this bakery and everything. But I mean, it took living in St. Paul for 20 years and meeting people and knowing people. And I mean, like it goes really deep.
Oh, I gotcha. 100%. It's funny how you think about the community aspect in terms of the people that you're feeding. But my goodness, you can't pull this off without, whether it's in your case, the landlord. With me, it was the electrician and the plumber that got us going. You know, it was the electrician, was a fellow hockey parent, right? Our daughters played hockey together. And it was like, okay, Marty, I seem to have signed this lease. I need your help, you know, wiring in this, this massive electric oven, you know, the biggest cable I had ever seen, you know, and, you know, if it wasn't for him, and then he knew, the plumber to bring in. And so he wasn't the general contractor, but he was kind of the general contractor because he knew everybody that we needed to hire. And without those kind of connections and people rooting for you, you can't get this stuff done. Like I just, you just can't. That's so cool. With me, the landlord was the one thing where I didn't have that relationship, and it bit us every 3 months. So I'm so, that's so neat to hear your story. You were in St. Paul when you were a musician as well, kind of thing. I'm just piecing the timeline together.
I moved to St. Paul in 1995.
Okay.
And I moved here to go to school, and then my wife and I met in 90. Oh, I think the first time I wrote to her, we were which I guess dates us right there, that we were pen pals first. I was traveling with a group of musicians and was said something to my friend Rachel that was in that group. I was like, man, nobody ever writes to me. She's like, do you write to anybody? And I was like, not really. And she's like, well, maybe that's where you should start. And so she told me about her friend Jody. And so like next time Rachel was writing to Jody, I just put a PS, hey, this is Nate, you should write to me or whatever. Anyway. And so, so we were pen pals for like a year and a half. She ended up moving here for a job in, 99. Yeah. And then we got married in 2000 and have lived in the same neighborhood ever since.
Sweet.
At one point, when we first moved in the neighborhood, we had a little two-bedroom bungalow, which was great for a newlywed couple. Got a little tight, like, when I was doing music and there was more gear all around the house. And then she was went to grad school, and so she had an office set up, and then we had two kids. And so there was a period of time where like you had to crawl over guitar cases to get into bed. And we thought, maybe we should move, but we didn't want to leave the neighborhood because like we just love, like we knew the families, everything. So one day I was going through the alley, and our neighbor Lee had his garage door open and it was totally cleared out. I was like, you getting ready for like a garage sale or something? Like, it's so clean. He's like, actually, we're getting ready to move. I was like, oh, you guys sell your house? He's like, yeah. I was like, let's talk. So yeah. So where I'm sitting now, is we're in what was Lee's house, and I can look out the window and see our old house across the alley.
So, oh, wow. Wow.
That was our big move, 12 years ago or 10 years ago.
that's like the farmer that, his son builds on the other corner of the field.
Right.
You know, that's always got to keep it together, but that's cool. Yeah. Cause you know, you've got roots, and that's a cool
really
thing.
Do. Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me more about the CSB or the community supported bakery side of things. Like, so I've read about them, but I've never experienced it, in terms of actual subscriptions. Like how does that work for your customers now?
Yeah. So we use a software, called Farmigo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty solid. It's not 100% designed for how we're using it. So we have a few workarounds, but how we've set it up is people sign up for a subscription and we rotate through, different breads. And there's kind of like, the automatic is that we fill up their basket with, this is the bread you're getting this week. And so that gives us a bread schedule to go by as far as, you know, just planning purposes. And, they sign up for either weekly or biweekly delivery. And then the day after delivery, we send out an email that says, this is your balance due, or this is, you know, a little account information for them. Right. And then this is next week's bread is going to be such and such. And then there's a link. They can actually log into like a online store and switch out their bread. Like if they want to change it, they can do that. Or they can add another bread. They can add cookies. We've been working more with other local producers. So like a local coffee roaster for coffee.
Oh, cool.
A jam maker and a honey maker. So they can add things. They can add cookies or cinnamon rolls or, yeah. So,
yeah. And so you may as well fill the bike up if you're taking it out.
Exactly.
Thing, right?
Yeah. And the way we do it is if we're delivering to homes, there's a home delivery charge. We figured out $1.25 is about for our radius and for how long it takes our bikers. $1.25 is a fair rate for that. And that's if they're getting one loaf of bread or 10 loaves of bread, like
right.
whatever they put in their basket, it's just a flat rate. But then we also have pickup sites. And the incentive for that is, you know, if we're delivering to 10 people with one drop off, that's way more efficient for us. So we don't do a delivery fee if you're at a pickup site.
Right. Right. You've got like partnerships or little agreements with different stores or whatever to drop off your stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Cool.
And what we look for is we try and find spots where it's advantageous for them. Like it's useful for them. It's helpful for them to have another reason for customers to come in. So tap rooms are good. Coffee shops are good because they'll come in and pick up their bread and buy a pound of coffee come into the tap room and also get a growler. And so,
Yeah,
and these are also places where that kind of are also small businesses that it feels like it's a good give and take. Like, we're in this together. We're supporting each other.
Yeah.
And and it's
you're not dropping at the Starbucks necessarily.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, in fact, the one time we went to we were looking for a pickup spot in a neighborhood and there was a bike shop. Right. And we're delivering by bicycle. We get all kinds of press because we're on bicycles. And we went into this bike shop that was part of a chain. And not a huge chain, but regional chain or whatever. And the manager, it's the only time we've gone to more of a corporate place. Yeah. And the manager said, "Oh, we're actually more interested in getting bigger. We don't want to get smaller." That was what they said to us. Wow. And we're like, this probably wouldn't be a good fit then.
yeah, for sure.
Because as it turns out, we're really tiny.
So the
one time we thought, well, maybe this would be good, this would be a good location. We were kind of like, man, how rude. So, yeah.
Well, there's a couple different ways of looking at business for sure. for sure. So, well, and so then, and so you've got subscription, you've got wholesale, and you've got retail now as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all,
yeah,
we have all three. Retail
now. Yeah. And yeah.
Is it, I'm just curious, is it kind of balanced in terms of quantities going out in each pile or each call?
Wholesale is our smallest, okay, and it's what we're least set up to do.
Right.
And so what, the wholesale that we do, because it's a small thing, we don't, we're not set up to do like a delivery, drive every day.
Right.
We do all the home deliveries by bicycle. Our wholesale, because we just have, like four spots really, like it's actually not efficient to go out on a bike. Right. As far as like being able to pay a living wage and everything. Yeah. And so like, so we do those by car, and our bread schedule, bread doesn't come out of the oven till 8:30 in the morning. So, but to cool and package doesn't go out to the co-ops that we deliver to till like 11 o'clock.
Right.
And we told them that straight up, and they were good with that. I've talked to other bakeries in town, and a lot of them are like, the only reason we have people coming in at 1 a.m. is so that we can get to our wholesale deliveries on time. Yeah. And we don't, yeah, we're set up in such a way that nobody comes in before 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And we're trying to doing our best to keep it that way. So,
well, and that's entirely why I'm trying to get my green card. So,
cause
that's a much more reasonable time to start.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, much more sane.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a funny story about, so we do our wholesale deliveries by car, and 2 weeks ago, and not always, but mostly, like most often it's by car. 2 weeks ago, one of our guys went out, who's one of our bikers, but he took his car, made this one drop off. It took about 20 seconds to run it in, sign the paperwork and come back out. When he came back out, his car had been stolen.
Oh, jeez. So oh, we're like, man.
We're like, this is the worst press ever for a bike-based business that the car got stolen. Like, no street cred anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly.
That's what we get for using cars. But anyways.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. But I was going to say about that 5 a.m. thing. So at Wheatstock, one of the things I realized is that how many conversations I had with people where we would talk about our bakeries, where we worked, we talk about bread, and they would almost always at some point kind of veer into like personal health or personal well-being and how people are doing. And I think that event was so life-giving because so many of us do this work that we really love, and we're in a weird way, like part of a huge community. Like today, so one of our bakers today is his last day. And as we were forming loaves together, I was like, just think in the last year and a half, like how many meals were made possible by the bread that you made. I mean, like it's overwhelming. Like, and so you're part of a neighborhood's fabric, but often, especially if you're doing the overnight shift, like nobody even knows who you are. You know, you have this, so it's easily becomes a very lonely profession. If you're in a small bakery, if you're working odd hours, because then you come home and when all your friends, I think this is common for many bakers, is like, you don't get called when people are like going to a movie, cause they're like, Mark's got to go to bed. He won't be available, or, you know.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
That's
like the best ad for this podcast ever, because that's exactly why I'm doing it, so many bakers are only known to other bakers because we sleep at the same time and are up at the same time. And a lot of our very best customers don't really know bakers, right? Because they're never around. Like whenever I had to work a double shift or something and work in the afternoons, people would come in and say, oh, there you are. Like you're the boss that's usually out golfing or something.
Right.
And it's like, oh, I finally decided to work and that kind of thing. And you're like, oh my God.
If you only knew.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah.
You know, and And we were pretty sane hours compared to a lot of places as well. But, you know, our kids were in high school when we had first opened, and they were always in like the musicals and stuff. And people would make sure that we stayed awake during intermission, you know, because we'd be there in the audience and all of our friends would make sure they came by and talked to us because they knew we were fading out by the time the second act came up. So,
That's hilarious.
It's funny how that is, how people are, the people that get it are so dependent on, or not dependent, so grateful for what you do, but don't really get to know you just because of the weird timing of things. So, well, and that's at Wheatstock, all the talk about refrigeration and holding those over and that kind of thing was pretty fascinating for me too. Like I came down there thinking the first thing I needed to buy again was a mixer. And I left there thinking the thing I need to buy again is a walk-in cooler. So, you know, like, it would make my life with that small brick oven so much easier, but that's never going to happen. And that's just the way it is. So.
There's a lot of tweaking you do to like make the best bread possible. But I think there's also a lot of tweaking that's done to get the most sleep possible. If I adjust my recipe like this, I can get another hours of sleep. And
to keep your staff too, right? Like it's you know, whether it's the midnight baker or the 1 a.m. baker or the 10 p.m. baker, that's a hard one. That's a hard one to get, you know, like that's a big ask for an awful lot of people. And so, you know, I wouldn't say especially, but when you're hiring often younger folks, it's like they're, you know, I get it. They want to go out and go to a concert at night or something like that. Right. But it's tough when then you have to start, you know, the concert ends at 10 and you're working at 1:30 or something. It's a tough one. So, and they don't end at 10. See, I'm old. They start at 10, but
there'd be a real market for concerts starting at like 4 in the afternoon, as far as I'm concerned. That's where it'd be. That'd be beautiful. Wow.
my friend, Tracy in Saskatoon, you might've met her out, Tracy Mazzolini. She's got a bakery, and then her and her brother have a pizza shop. And she said that she's fascinated now by the idea of happy hour. She's putting all of her time into things at the pizza parlor that they can do for happy hour events, because that's her dinner time. And then she's off to bed. So she's like, this is prime time for me. So they're going to have the best happy hour in the city because that's baker's dinner time. So, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, that's neat. And your wife isn't, is she part of the bakery or?
No. Yeah. She's got her own gig going. So but what's great is like, even though I'm there all the time, the difference between me being there all the time and me being on the road and things as a musician is that like, she's like, you're still gone most of the time, but at least now I know where you are.
Right.
You know, and like being so close to home, like, so like when she's walking the dog in the morning, she always walks by and knocks on the window, and I go out and embarrass her on a busy street.
Oh, that's excellent though. That makes the workday part of life. You know, it's just the day, which is so cool. I've never got the hang of the folks that can do the monster commutes and stuff, whether you're a baker or not. The fact that you're in your own neighborhood is fantastic.
Yeah. So it really is.
Yeah. So I think I've done pretty well now going this long into the conversation and not asking. So what's it like biking year round in St. Paul?
Yeah.
But nobody's asked that one before.
Yeah. It's a great question though, because people, it's totally doable. We have a policy. If it's dangerous for the cyclist to be out, we're going to drive the bread. Right. And we've done that. We've had 5 days where the bikes couldn't go out, in the last 4 years of delivery. And two of those were, we just had so much fresh snow that, you know, we have bikes, the trailers on the back of the bikes now are, it's like a 2 by 2 foot by 6 foot trailer. It's pretty sizable. You can get about 80 loaves in there.
Okay.
And, but there's a lot of drag. And so, yeah, so biking in the winter with fresh snow sometimes is near impossible.
Right.
We do put studded tires on the bikes, which makes a big difference. But then there's been a couple days where it's been so icy that even though the bikes have studded tires and they're doing all right, the concern has been watching other cars sliding on the road. Yeah. And so it's not about the bike wiping out so much as a car wiping into the bike.
Right. Oh, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, especially now, like the first 2 years, it was Micah, my friend Micah and I doing all the biking. And as the owners, like, you take different risks.
Yes.
But when you have someone you care about on a bike out there, we definitely are much more cautious as far as like, you know, maybe we should wait a couple hours for roads to get plowed before you go out, or maybe you should take a car today or whatever, you know, like, you know, it's cool to be on bikes and it's, you know, better for the earth. It's all that thing. But, like, we're not going to be martyrs for bikes.
Safety first, for sure.
Safety first, yeah.
Yeah. But, well, and do you have a pretty good cycling culture there year-round? Or, like, are you...
We do.
Okay.
We do, yeah. The Twin Cities, usually if it's something cool, the Twin Cities are referred to as Minneapolis.
Right.
And not St. Paul gets left out all this bit. But, and I'll just, for the record, like, Minneapolis is my favorite first ring suburb. So I'm all about like, I have no bad things to say about Minneapolis.
Exactly. Exactly.
Great. Every now and then I go out west and visit.
Yeah.
But we do. Yeah. We have really good cycling culture, which is helpful because there's a pretty good awareness of how to interact with bikes on the road and stuff. And because we have trailers on the back and like our names on the trailer and big orange caution triangle on there, I think we get a lot more respect on the road because people see that this is like a legitimate endeavor and things. And so I've had very few road conflicts, and we've had tons of almost always if someone's honking or yelling, it's the window is getting rolled down and they're like, "We love your bread."
Oh, great.
Like, "We were in on Saturday," or whatever. It's like, so it's like, you know, and that's like one more aspect of the community building is that like, I do believe that like bikes build community in a unique way. Like, especially in the summer, like one of my favorites is, when you're delivering in a residential neighborhood in the summer and all these other kids are out on bikes, like when you go by with the trailer, like all of a sudden you got a parade, like they'll race, other kids are like racing you and, and you come up to stoplights and stop and cars will like roll down the window and be like, "What are you doing?" And you'll start talking and like, "Oh yeah, my friend heard about that." And so there really is some fun, you know, it takes down barriers between people, like physically there's no barrier when you're on a bike. So, the other thing I'll say too about biking year round is that we did invest in a bike with, an electric assist.
Oh, nice.
Motor on the back. And that's been really great. Again, it's just like, it's a functional way to get around, low impact, and it allows for, so we have two riders that go out, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And if one of them can't and the other one's doing a double shift or whatever, it's actually possible to do with a little assistance. Our routes are between 15 and 25 miles of biking with the trailer on the back. So St. Paul is a bit hilly. We're right by our bakery is not far from the river, so everything, no matter which direction you go from where we are, it's uphill. And that's at the beginning of the route when your trailer is full and everything. So the e-assist was getting that on the bikes was, you know, kind of just a move of practicality. It allows the bikers to do a more efficient job. You know, and like as a business owner, you're paying someone by the hour. You're like, "Hey."
You'll pay off that e-assist with an hour
exactly.
a day.
So the winters really aren't that bad. It's a lot of layering and going out. With the trailers on the back, most of us would take snow over a windy day any day.
Sure.
Yep. Those are like, there's so much drag on those things.
Yeah.
So.
I remember pulling two little kids on a bike trailer, and I didn't do it. My wife did it much more than I did, but holy, the times that I did, it was like, this is hard, especially you hit a red light and you're just cursing because you got to get your momentum back up again.
Exactly.
First, you have to figure out how to stop this thing and then get your momentum back up. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's this one house that we delivered to that's on a pretty steep hill in St. Paul, and there's kind of switchbacks going down the side of this hill, and you can bike down that. But then there's an old road that's almost like an alley that goes straight down it. And one day I was delivering, and Paul said, he's like, you know, there's a shortcut down the hill, and so that shortcut became our challenge because. Getting up that, and this was before we had e-assist. So getting up that, I mean, like you get to the top and you're just about to have a heart attack. It was so hard. And then in the winter going down it, it could be so icy sometimes that one time I had both brakes locked up. I had both my feet on the hill and I was just sliding down looking at the intersection at the bottom.
Oh my gosh.
So that was, whoever had that route would always come back. That was the thing you talked about. He's like, hey, did you take the shortcut by Paul's place?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so cool. It sounds like such a neat environment that you're building and you're part of. This is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So what's your big thing for this year? What's the big next big thing for you?
Yeah, the next big thing. Really, like, we're it seems like our trend as a bakery is that we try out lots of things and kind of expand.
Yeah.
And then after about 3 months of that, we say, this is more than we can actually do. What do we get rid of? And then narrow down again. And so right now we're doing this kind of like streamlining, you know, and it's, I think the coming, like having not worked in other bakeries, one of the hardest, you know, when you're doing it yourself, you don't always think about paying yourself. You just think of, you know, you don't track your hours, which would be my advice to anybody that did what I did, or, it might be really depressing at times, but you should track all your hours before you move any further.
You should. Okay. I thought you said, I thought you were going to say, don't do that. You're just going to cry.
Yeah. Or maybe so. You can look at it two ways, I guess. Yeah. But the, you know, and like, so like you put together your business plans and you're like, this is what it's going to cost everything. But, you can't overvalue efficiency. Like for me, I mean, like that's what I've learned the most of is like, if the mixer is going, you know, for our size bakery, for our size mixer, for our mix schedule and our scaling and everything, like anything under 20 loaves in there is too small. Right. And the sweet spot for us is, like 30 loaves.
Right.
That works really well, how we schedule things. And if we can do, so that's what we were doing is we had so many different breads. We were doing some of them where we were just doing like, just do 8 loaves of these because whatever. And all of a sudden you're like, we're spending more time cleaning out mixers than we are, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Whatever. So, yep, totally. So we're looking at doing a few less options each day, for the sake of efficiency. And then also like when we're doing like, a baker's choice or something where we know it'll just be a smaller item, doing hand mixes for that,
right?
Whenever possible. And so, which also for me and the other bakers, like I used to hand mix everything. I know you hand mix everything,
right?
When you get away from that and you're using a mixer all the time, it's easy to lose the feel of like just knowing what your dough is doing and the activity of your starter. We do all our breads are sourdough or naturally leavened breads. And so like, I feel like there's a little bit more of a feel component. So it's also like an excuse to like, it's forcing us, you know, to daily have at least one thing where our hands are in the dough and we're watching that and learning from it. And so I think that's just good for all of us as bakers to
that muscle memory is huge. And like it, for me anyways, like you lose it over time. That's why I love things like Wheatstock or visiting other bakeries, because if I'm sort of 1% to the left every week, you know, at the end of the year, it's quite a bit different than at the start of the year, right? And so I get to get a reset, or if not a reset, at least you experience some other things, and then you can decide whether or not you need a reset.
Yeah.
Like when I came back from Rhode Island, I actually started mixing things less instead of more, even though it's by hand, right? Just kind of one less fold, get it a little bit more, you know, a little bit more extensible and stuff. And it was a remarkable change in the bread. So
really,
like it's still nothing like we were handling there in terms of fragility, but it's pretty neat. I get a kick out of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think when you find, if you find that you're the right size, that's a good thing. You know, like you were saying, well, we're going to try this new thing, and that means we have to cut something out. It's like if the big machine, the big business machine, is working at that size, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
like it really is, because it's not always all about I got a double all the time.
Yeah,
I have a customer of mine that used to run a greenhouse, and a very successful one. And right from when I opened the bakery, he said, well, so did your business double last year? Because it should be like doubling every year. And I'm like, I make things by hand. It can't. cannot double every year.
unless I start showing up with four hands.
Exactly. It's just a different thing. So I'm very happy for you with how you started things and the connection that you keep with your customers, whether it's through the subscription service or getting the bikes out in the out and around the neighborhood and that kind of thing. Yeah. Even if it's not you riding the bike now, it's nice that your crew can make those connections with folks as well. That's so awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That sort of like keeping, like figuring out what's the right size, and everything. That was it. So one of the things when I came back, we kind of laid out a vision for the next year as far as like where we wanted to grow, what sorts of breads we wanted to do, whatever. And right now we're open 5 days a week. So we're open Tuesday through Saturday.
Right.
Monday's a prep day, but Sundays, nobody has to be responsible for anything. Like everybody can turn off their phones. You know?
Exactly.
Which is fantastic. But you know, like as far as being profitable and everything, you know, whether we're open one day a week or 7 days a week, our rent stays the same. So it's like, how do we get the most out of this space? And so one of the things I laid out there was like, if we grow here, here, and here, we can get to a point where we're open 7 days a week. You know, if we hire these key people, and as I was saying, I've been sitting down and talking to everybody, and there's like six of us at, six folks that work for Brick Bread. And, Every single person has been like, all right, we'll go there with you.
Mm-hmm.
But what could we do to not have to be open 7 days a week? Like not in necessarily in a resistance way, but more in a quality of life way. Like even if we hire more people, those are people that will potentially get sick at some point and we'll get a phone call that says, hey, can you work this Sunday? And like, so it's like in our kind of like 9 months vision is written in, revisit every 6 weeks or every 9 weeks. And so already I'm like, okay, when we sit down and revisit this, like we're going to rework the numbers and see, okay, what if we did, you know, like Friday's our quiet day for us.
So
Thursday production wise is we can do a lot more production on a Thursday afternoon for Friday bakes. And so it's like, okay, how could we max out our Fridays instead of adding a Sunday or, you know, whatever, like, which has just been really fun with the team we have right now. Like everybody's invested. Everybody like sees kind of the big picture of like, yes, we all want Brick Bread to succeed, but we also know that its success is dependent on the health of everyone that works here. So,
right.
So it's exciting that way, like to kind of have that feedback and figure that stuff out.
Do you have a way to involve your customers somehow in that conversation?
Not really. Not like a built-in. No.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you have suggestions?
Well, I was just thinking like, we had a customer newsletter, or like an email newsletter that we sent out about once a month. And, you know, if you had something like that, or even with your subscribers or like a suggestion box in the shop, just sort of more, I was just off the top of my head thinking more like a question of the week, right? You know, like what do you do on Fridays? You know, or that kind of a thing, right? Just to, somehow get their buy-in, because the thing that I learned after I closed was that my customers were much more invested in our bakery than I even thought they were. And I thought they were pretty tight in there. Right. And so, I'm just thinking, if you ever get into a situation where you're saying, well, let's make this big change and see what happens, you know, like let's go to 7 days a week and see what happens, then anything that you can do ahead of time to try and get some feedback on the idea might be good. And I just think you've actually probably got some advantage with that, because you've got a major group of customers that are willing to pay up front, or at least commit up front.
Yeah.
True. Any way that you can leverage that, you know, like even if it's I don't know your business, but you know, like a Monday delivery or something, you know, like it would take a commitment for me to open Monday, you know, not just I'm sure I would come by maybe once in a while.
And I will say like that's the subscription model is really great for that, as far as like having some buy-in before you do something. So like, January and February, January especially, we had a really quiet January this year, which is not uncommon.
Right.
And man, if we didn't have the subscribers that like support us and like rain or shine are getting their bread, I'm not sure if we would have made payroll.
I hear you.
It gets so tight. And so like, so there is that sort of like, I mean, that's a great way to look at it. Is like, before we say we're open on Mondays or whatever, how do we, what kind of buy-in do we have? Is there a guarantee that we can assure that this is going to work?
Well, and then the only other question, or maybe the way to frame a question might be, is there anything going on, you know, Sundays and Mondays, let's say, or Fridays, if those are the 3 days in the neighborhood, in that wider community that you can leverage, right? So yeah, I don't know, maybe you're not open on Sundays, but you're making something for someone else on Sundays that make it worth it for you, you know? You know, just that again, that sort of mindset of leveraging the community that you're part of, to help justify the decision maybe, or even, you know, put some guarantees in, you know, as much as you can guarantee anything, but you know,
something tapping like that. Into something that's already happening. Yeah. Like there's a,
Cause like I started teaching baking classes just at the community level. And I always do that on Sundays because, well, I know I'm not baking on Sundays, right? And so, you know, there's something that you can use the space.
Yeah.
That's not production, and is, you know, something where folks pay in advance, right?
Yeah.
You know, just throwing it out there because it's always remarkable to me, like, you know, your startup experience sounds an awful lot like mine, where, you know, started small and got really, really popular. And then it was like, okay, the next stage is we need to open up our own place and sign a lease and that kind of thing. And at every step, you're taking all the risk.
Yeah.
And I'm in favor now of, especially for the second stage of where do you, you know, I would like to do things where there's less risk involved.
Yeah.
I don't want to leverage myself more, but I would like to, you know, let's jointly leverage ourselves more, kind of a thing. So,
maybe an equivalent to that, as far as like, not wanting to leverage yourself, not wanting to put it all on yourself, is like this realization that like, like Wheatstock was kind of a milestone for me because I was gone for an entire week.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And the bakery was fine without
it's still there.
Yeah. In fact, I think there were improvements when I got back.
That's like, awesome. Yeah.
You know, but like, it's that sort of like how to create a bakery that's not dependent on me is kind of, that's that actually might be the, when you talk about like what's coming up in the next year, what's the big, I think that's a big step.
Yep.
Yeah. To get things where everything's in order where, yeah. And we're pretty close to that. It's really, I think my main role there is filling in when there's extra things to do that we can't actually afford to pay somebody to do.
Yep. You know? Perfect. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every business owner, I'm sure. Like, yeah.
And I saw on your website one line where it's like, I think it was in the job section, you know, do you like spreadsheets? Lots and lots of spreadsheets. And it's like, okay. Yeah. Okay. I like this guy. Here's a guy after my own heart.
you're many spreadsheets.
You're not running your bakery on scoops.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. We've been, that's actually, well, yeah. One of our, I used to do all the spreadsheets for the weekend and all the recipes and everything. And that's one of those things that I'm like, we have capable bakers. I don't need to do this. And so like, it's just taking the time to train them in. So today, Grace, we were making modifications to a recipe, and instead of me just doing it, like, I was like, do you remember how to switch up these recipes and the percentages and put in the formulas? And yes, of course, she's way awesome. More capable than I am. And it's like,
awesome.
That, oh yeah. You guys don't need me.
That's
I'll just walk around and drink coffee.
It starts out as being a threat and ends up as being a goal. So that's fantastic. Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, I know you've got to get going. I want to make sure you're not late for your next thing, but yeah. Nate, I really appreciate this chat a lot. It's, it was great to meet you, out in Providence.
Yeah.
And really, really, great to talk to you today as well. So,
well, you too, Mark, this is fantastic. Yeah. I'm so honored to be part of this, and I can't wait to listen to the podcast coming up. And, I think it'd be interesting if there's a way to track the downloads to see how many downloads there are between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. I think that would be.
I'll look that up for sure. I'll see. We're recording this chat on the official launch day of the podcast, right? Like, I just let folks know about it today, so I have to start seeing what stats there are. I was going to be like, well, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to look at them, but here's at least a reason to see. So
yeah,
well, so that's awesome. The next time I'm in the St. Paul area, I'm definitely coming to say hi, but fantastic. I really appreciate the talk.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thanks.
All the best.
Thanks for listening to this Second Rise chat. If you enjoyed this talk, there are over 170 more conversations with bakers from all around the world at riseuppod.com. Head on over and give them a listen. And if you love the show, click on that gorgeous little support the show button too. Every contribution is welcome, helpful, and treasured. And if there's a baker that you think I should be talking to, drop me a line at mark@riseuppod.com and let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Until next week, keep making the good stuff. Work hard, bake lots, rest when you need it. Happy baking. Bye-bye.